This is Dissecting Dragons, a speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers.
Welcome to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers. I'm Madeleine Vaughan.
And I'm Jules Ironside. This week, Heavenly Hosts and Fallen Fiends, the angelic being in speculative fiction.
Yes, that's a very sensible title for this
Madeleine
week's
wanted
episode.
To call it something different.
I wanted to call it Michael Gabriel Lucifer Feathered Gits in Fiction.
You see how we have to rein each other in a bit?
Which I think was entirely appropriate for an episode about angels. Jules's was probably a little bit more appropriate for this episode. Or was it? I guess we'll see as we turn to the topic of angels. So I feel like angels have popped up in fiction a fair bit, but they're actually becoming quite popular at the moment again.
Yes, they are. I think that's largely down to programs like Supernatural.
Yes, I tend to agree with you. And obviously we are going to touch down on Supernatural because I think it would be quite ridiculous not to talk about angels and not mention Supernatural. But before we start on Supernatural, I would quite like to talk about the comic, movie and TV series that inspired Supernatural, and that is Constantine.
Right.
And Hellblazer. So basically the story follows a man named John Constantine who can see demons. And he is a dabbler in sort of dark magic and things along those lines. And he's a bit of an anti-hero, to be honest. Pretty much everyone around him dies except for him. He's quite a scrappy guy. And he deals with angels quite periodically. And he doesn't really necessarily like them. And Supernatural was inspired by Hellblazer. First of all, in that Castiel wears clothes which are very similar to John Constantine's. His entire wardrobe was inspired by John Constantine. And the idea that angels are kind of a bit dickish.
I was going to say, they're kind of douchebags, aren't they?
They are. They're not very nice. They're a little bit holier than thou, but they don't really love humanity that much. And they tend to be quite rude, to be honest.
They are really... They're like the uber privileged kids who've been taught to be polite but don't really know what to do with any of it.
Exactly, yeah. So it is interesting to see angels sort of shown in this way. But another thing is that I think what happened was that angels went from being what they were in the Bible, which were these warriors. They were the warriors of God, and they were rather terrifying, actually. If you really think about it, they were not very pleasant. And there's even actually a reference that Sarah J. Maas did say that in the final A Court of Thorns and Roses book, so A Court of Wings and Ruin, Amaran, her actual form was quite possibly one of the Old Testament angels.
Yeah, well, I thought I got that because she was like really, really heavily suggesting it all through three books. So
yeah.
Anyone with half a brain probably picks
yeah,
that
yeah, yeah.
up.
Yeah, could have sort of picked that up. But she was meant to be one of the old, you know, the old angels. So angels were pretty scary. They were rather terrifying. They weren't cuddly. They weren't necessarily very kind. Even though they did sometimes come. I mean, even within the songs, you know, the angels coming to speak to the shepherds. The shepherds are terrified. Angels are not, and sometimes maybe they'll take on the form of something which looks a bit friendlier, but they were rather scary and they were tough. And then sort of there was a period where angels stopped being associated with warriors and started to be more associated with something a lot more cuddly.
Yeah. I mean, in fairness, if you look at, say, the Quran, different levels of angelic being are associated with different things, and in the same way that many Christian sects have patron saints or things, you had patron angelic beings of pretty much everything. So you had things like the angel of death, Uriel. You had the divine destroyer, Michael, responsible for keeping the demons in hell.
Yeah.
Important job. Gabriel was kind of the announcer.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's not the correct term. I'm not sure what his job description
was. He was basically a bit of a messenger, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, Gabriel means angel of the Lord, but yeah, basically angel of the Lord is always depicted with a trumpet.
Yeah, and he was a bit sort of like the mouthpiece.
Yeah, I mean, the actual voice of God was known as Metatron.
Yeah, Metatron.
Then you had things like the seraphim, which were a high choir of angel, and then the cherubim or cherubim were below that. Something went wrong somewhere, probably during the Victorian era, because the cherubim became cherubs. I think this dates back to the Renaissance as well, but it was very particular, sort of rosy-cheeked in both sense of the word.
Yeah.
Little winged babies kind of thing. And that's not what the cherubim looked like. The cherubim were depicted as wheels within wheels with thousands of eyes, which sounds utterly terrifying. It's like, that's not kind of, okay, that's cute, I want to hang that on my Christmas tree, is it really?
Yeah. This Christmas, decorate with real Christian imagery.
Never sleep again. That's why you steal all the pagan stuff. Come on.
It was much
the pagan
nicer.
Stuff is left terrifying.
So, yeah. You... Dear me. They kind of went through this transformation at the same time the fairies went through the transformation. Yes, I said it. I should add, however, that I'm excused from saying the word fairy because of a very kind gift that Gareth sent to me, which was a token, what's it called?
It's like an IOU, isn't it, really?
Sort of, yeah. It was a voucher that allows me to use the word fairy without having to pay into the jar, but it only operates until the 15th of October, so this is me.
This is me getting them in now.
Use of it. the angels kind of became a lot more sort of cuddly, and we then started to get a lot of imagery of them as these little, you know, statues, rather nice, very friendly. And then we went completely the other way again. And the Hellblazer comics started looking at angels sort of not as villains, but kind of villainous. As in their interests were not the same interests as us, and they didn't really understand humans, and they were at odds. So Constantine was very interesting. And obviously there have been the comics, there's been the TV series, and there has been the movie. I'm going to start with the movie with Keanu Reeves in it, which is the first incarnation of Constantine that I ever came across. And the movie is called Constantine. And I did really love it, actually. I think it's a very good movie. And in it, you have Gabriel. And Gabriel's played by a woman. And Gabriel is trying to bring about the next apocalypse.
Yes.
He's trying to release the spawn of Satan in order to sort of jumpstart the end of the world. And she thoroughly believes that it is for the sake of humanity, that it is for the sake of cleansing everyone.
Yeah, in the context of the film, she's very much an indoctrinated radical, isn't she?
Yeah, she is. But she still feels very holy in what she's doing, like it is justified, even though she's kind of going behind people's backs to do it. And I'm not going to ruin how the end of the film works, but because it is actually a good film, and I do recommend watching it. But that was a very interesting incarnation of angels, and it was the first time that I'd seen angels done in that way. You then have exactly the same thing in Constantine, but actually the angel who John calls Manny seems to be sort of on his side, but is also again quite holier than thou, and doesn't really offer John much help, as in he tells John what to do and then kind of buggers off. Like a little bit of assistance, guys. And they're like, well, you didn't ask for assistance. And it's a vicious cycle. And the interesting thing is that we're then given this idea that angels have this ultimate power, this humongous power, but they're very limited in how they can use it. Yeah, that was, I do like the way that angels are done there. And you also get angels, fallen angels, within the Constantine universe, which I really like. I've got several films and a lot of TV series and stuff that I can talk about with angels. So before I do, Jules.
Let's talk about some of the well, I suppose the original material, really.
Yeah.
Now, Paradise Lost isn't the original material, but it certainly draws on the original material, both apocryphal and official, shall we say. Study the Quran,
Yeah.
Kabbalah rather. As I said, you will find Kabbalah is particularly interesting because as you work your way up the, up the structure, as it were, doing the meditations or whatever. I won't go into too much detail, but it's supposed to connect you with different mindsets to do with these angelic, I say, harmonies in the loosest possible term here. They're archetypal things, they're archetypal messengers. So you're supposed to be connecting with different parts of your own subconscious, I suppose. And then there's a whole series of myths and legends that go with each bit as well. I'm not like a big follower of this. I've just sort of learned enough that just to satisfy my curiosity, really. But obviously, then you've got the particularly the Holy Bible used by the Catholics. Some of the angels have sort of disappeared out of some of the later versions of the Bible, probably because when bits of the Bible started to get more improbable as people sort of developed the religion of Christianity, they sort of shuffled a few things off to the side.
Yeah, like dragons.
Like dragons. There were dragons in the Bible
Yep,
originally.
there were.
And at one point, the dragon and angel were almost synonymous, depending on what the context was, because the word angel sort of comes from the Latin angelus, which means messenger, a supernatural messenger. Now, assuming the angels just come up to, basically give you an email from God, that's not too bad. But if the angel comes as a dragon, then you've done something bad. Something
We
bad's
done
going
messed up.
on. You have to look at them in the context of the Old Testament, particularly. And when angels turned up, bad stuff happened because, or bad stuff was already happening. If you take Sodom and Gomorrah, for example, the angels turned up and you had that fine, upstanding follower of God who said, "Come into my house, I will put you up for the night." Presumably, the angels were quite good looking. And the men of the town gathered outside the house and said, "Send the strangers out to us, we want to rape them." And the man's like, "Oh, no, sodomy's bad. You can't do that." It probably wasn't called sodomy because they're in Sodom, but work with me here.
I just love the knock, knock, knock. We saw you had strangers in the house. Yes, well, send them out.
We wish to avail ourselves of their backsides. No, okay, I'm paraphrasing, but this is actually what happens. And he says, "No, you can't, but here, I have four virgin daughters. Take them instead." And the angels are so grateful, they give him a warning. And Lot, because obviously it was Lot, and his wife and his daughters, who probably don't like their father very much anymore, all escape from Sodom as the angels rain down fire on Sodom and Gomorrah for their immoral ways.
Yes,
Of course, Lot's wife looks back and turns into a pillar of
in
salt.
terms of the salt, yeah, as you do.
As you do. Now, all that could actually be a metaphor, probably, for something like a volcanic eruption. It would be reasonable to suggest that. Apart from the whole bit at the beginning where it's like the volcanic eruption or the angels raining fire was a direct result of someone having homosexual urges.
Yeah,
So,
I don't think those two, unless homosexuals cause volcanoes. Someone probably once said it. Anyway,
so there's that, for example. One of the more innocent stories, Jacob wrestling with an angel. He
yeah.
wrestled all night and because Jacob had done something wrong. He'd actually really betrayed his brother Esau. And he also had the dream about the Jacob's ladder, they call it, don't they? The angels just going up one side and descending the other.
Yeah.
I think he must have had some seriously interesting berries out in the desert.
I think it's entirely possible.
That's my theory.
So yeah, there's the Jacob's ladder. Then of course there's the angel of death when Uriel. Are you sure it's Uriel? Is it not Azrael? Azrael's the angel of death.
Uriel is one of them, though. It might be a couple of angels of death, in
Yeah,
fairness.
because I
But
think
yes, you're right.
Azrael is the angel that came down into Egypt.
During the Passover,
Yeah.
the firstborn. Yeah, that's again something well, slightly different, but yes, killed an entire generation of the firstborn children. Well, sons. For all we know, they left the daughters alone, but...
Yeah, but the firstborn sons were all killed. So yes, angels were not great. You didn't really want to see an angel, to be honest.
No, you didn't.
Since they only really came down when something was wrong.
Now, they also turned up to tell you about things like you're going to have a baby. Like, one turned up to tell Abraham that he was going to have a child, not by himself. Presumably it was his wife, but his wife wasn't important enough to get the message.
Mm.
Obviously she gave birth to Isaac, and then the angel turned up and said, you now must sacrifice your son, your only son. And then God at the last moment sort of stopped him and said, no, I was joking. Here, sacrifice this sheep to me instead.
Yeah, he also sent an angel to do that. And you must think, what would have happened if the angel had been just a second delayed? There was traffic on the stairs.
let's be honest, in the Old Testament particularly, God's kind of a dick.
Careful. You might get an angel knocking on your door.
Well, I'll ask them some interesting pertinent questions for the podcast.
Yes, very good. So yes, angels historically, when they turned up, good things weren't really likely to happen. And it was always came when the good things did happen, they did always come with a little pinch of salt. So congratulations, you're gonna have a baby. It will die in excruciating pain, but hooray. So they were not unanimous with good things until much later.
No, I will just clarify here that where I'm, okay, being a bit tongue-in-cheek, I'm being a bit tongue-in-cheek at the Christian reimagined interpretation of the Kabbalistic version of angels. Because if you look at the Kabbalah, that it does have some internal logic to it. Whether you buy into it or not, it does make some sense. And I'm not just going to poke fun at things that are someone's holies, as it were.
Yeah.
that's not what I'm about. But at the same time, when you start holding up parts of the Bible to me and saying, well, aren't angels lovely, blah blah blah, it's like, well no, actually they're kind of like dragons, they're kind of like flying nuclear bombs, and you don't really want one going off near you.
Yeah. Can confirm, don't really want an angel near me. Now, another series of books, actually, in which we see angels sort of later on, is the Harry Dresden books, the Dresden Files.
I've not got to a point where there are angels, I've got to say.
Okay, well, there are angels.
That's fine, I'll take your word for it.
There are angels, they do turn up. And again, there is this sort of this limit to kind of what they're, that they have great power, but there's a limit to what they're allowed to do, because they can't interfere with free will. And that is something that is consistent in a lot of fiction. And again, I have to mention fairies, because the links between fairies and angels are enormous. You know, yes. There are a lot of similarities, and there is even a mode of belief, which is that fairies are fallen angels, in that when God cast Lucifer out, he was Samael, and then he became Lucifer. There was this hole in heaven, and everyone was falling out, and some of the angels said, quick, close it before everyone falls out. And so God then closed the hole, and the angels that fell then became different things, depending where they landed. So if they landed down, they were fallen, or they would, if they were in on the earth, and they became fairies, or they, if they were in the sky, they became something else, I'm not sure. So there is a consistent thing, which is that fairies, fallen or not, cannot interfere with free will. You need to consent to things. You need to ask them for things before they can do them.
As an interesting aside, neither God nor the devil can interfere with free will either.
Yeah.
According to biblical sources. So once again, humans have choice.
Yeah.
We may choose badly, but
we have choice. And and angels are supposed to kind of guide us in certain directions, but they can't make the choices on their own. And that opens up an interesting mode of thought, which is that humans have a choice, and therefore does that mean that angels don't?
Yes, and that's something that was kind of addressed to a certain extent in Paradise Lost, as I mentioned.
Yeah.
There's an interesting story around Paradise Lost in that Milton himself was pretty much blind at the time, so a lot of it was written down, taken in dictation by his daughters.
Yes.
Particularly the youngest, Deborah, who was quite a scholar, as I understand. And he had an awful lot of sympathy. Now, you know, it's speculation on my part and on several other people's parts, but how much of that sympathy was really from Milton for the fallen angels, for the devil even, sympathy for the devil, how much of it was from Milton himself, and how much of it was Deborah rewriting up a fair copy of her father's work?
Yeah.
And giving it just a little bit of a, you know, without even meaning to, because when you edit something, you can start to put your own slant on it, which is why, you know, good editors are priceless, because they just don't affect the overall text too much.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's an interesting thought. There's a very good book fiction called Fallen by Kim Wilkins, who I've mentioned before, and that's all about literally the writing of Paradise Lost, except there are real angelic beings trying to influence what actually gets put into the text.
Oh, that's a great idea.
It's a really, really good book.
What would have been her motivation to sort of have a slightly more sympathetic look at angels? Do you know?
I don't know what her motivation would have been. I would guess it would be something like the fact that she was growing up, I say growing up, she'd have been about 16 or 17 when she first started doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And this was Puritan England at the time, where educated women were regarded with a lot of suspicion. Her father had basically turned her into an amanuensis, and he was quite a cold man. So even if it was just a case of she was doing it without even consciously realizing it, assuming that this is what happened, just because her imagination took her there a little bit and it seemed more to her. And then obviously when people actually read what had been written, it's Milton's work, you know, she's completely out of the picture, and they loved it. Perhaps they loved this subversive idea that we might have more in common with Lucifer and his fallen army than
we do
heavenly
with
host.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, it could have just been a case of, no, Milton genuinely felt sympathetic like that, and Deborah just word for word, comma for comma, took it all down. You don't know.
Yeah, no, we don't know. But it is interesting, and I think, I guess that leads us on to the next line, which is this sympathy for the devil.
Yes.
And regarding Lucifer as an angel. Now, we've had an episode on Lucifer, so I'm not going to be talking about Lucifer as the devil. I am going to be looking at him as an angel and as an angelic being. I've mentioned Lucifer, the TV show on Fox, I think it's Fox, a few times. And season 3 has only just started, which is very exciting because I'm very excited to see it back. And this season is looking at Lucifer more as an angel, in that he had a thing in previous seasons, and I'm sorry, this is spoilers for anyone. He had a thing in previous seasons called the Devil Face, in that he could literally terrify people into committing suicide or to going crazy by showing them his true face, which is the face of the devil, and his eyes would go red and his face was terrifying, and he could do that. And he cut off his wings when he first arrived in the human world, and then he got rid of them. And at the end of season 2, you just see him, he gets hit over the head by an unknown assailant, and when he wakes up, he's in the middle of the desert and he's got his wings back. They've apparently regrown. And this season so far, he's already tried to cut his wings off once more, and they've already grown back. And he's lost his devil face.
Huh.
Which is very interesting, because it's very much now, he's lost what makes him the devil. He's no longer in hell. He doesn't even have that sort of that power. He has the powers that he got when he was first an angel, so he can get people to admit what their true desires are. But yeah, he has these wings instead, and no matter how many times he seems to cut them off, they keep growing back. And so I'm really interested to see where they're going to take this and how they're going to explore his sort of angelicness, because a few times they've already mentioned that before he was Lucifer, he was Samael. And Samael was again one of he was an archangel, and he was again one of the angels of death. And Lucifer obviously means lightbringer, but Samael means venom of God.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I'm very, very interested in how they're going to sort of to tie it all in together. And interestingly enough, they've got another angel, his big brother, who's called Amenadiel. And I'm not actually sure whether Amenadiel is an actual figure within the Judaic or the Christian religion. I don't know whether that name is familiar to you.
It's not to me, but there are quite literally hundreds of angels, all with their own different attributes that they're supposed to be guardians of. I know I've mentioned before Namar, the god, the angel of sacred prostitution, for example, which you wouldn't expect to be actually a thing, but really is.
It's and you've got Jophiel, who was the angel, meaning beauty of God, who was the angel who cast Adam and Eve out of the Garden of Eden, and now guards it. And actually, Jophiel is another fallen angel.
Yes.
And that always interested me, was that you could have angels who were fallen but were still working within the within God's plan, were still doing what they were supposed to be doing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the war in heaven mythology is just fascinating anyway, because it's all supposed to predate the create, well, just borderline predate the creation of humans, because that was what the big argument was about. God says to his archangels, of which Lucifer was one, you must now love this beyond all things, meaning humans. And Lucifer went, hang on a minute. If we are supposed to love humans beyond all things, then, aren't we supposed to be loving you, kind of thing. And absolutely refused. Basically thought humans are a bit ridiculous, probably.
Well, yeah, he just said that, look, I can't love them more than I love you. And God went, well, out you go.
There's another story during the creation myths. I don't know whether this is, again, apocryphal or not, but it's something to do with an angel laughing at a donkey. I'm going to have to look that up, which sounds utterly ridiculous, and it's so ridiculous it's probably a thing. I'll look that up and get back to you. Well,
I
once
look forward
again, it
to it.
was like it all seems to hold the same sort of theme of, well, just because you think you're at the absolute pinnacle, that doesn't mean you're allowed to laugh at everything else. Or basically, just don't laugh at the stuff that God makes when he's had a little bit too much wine on a Sunday, kind of thing. Because it's all God's divine plan.
Clearly.
But there's also the angelic myths that you find in things like the Nag Hammadi texts and the Dead Sea Scrolls, which we've mentioned before, so I'll just skip over it. But basically, of the Nephilim, which were angels, it was after the war in heaven, so they weren't part of the fall, and they sort of abdicated in between. But they fell in love with human women, came down and interbred with us. And there's, if you then follow these apocryphal texts, then allegedly there are these sort of half angelic, half human beings that created this race that I think some people have sort of linked to places like Atlantis and things like that, which to me I think is sort of mixing and matching your mythology a bit, but there's definitely some interesting stuff there for writers looking for inspiration.
It is a whole Angels are great because there's a lot of potential there with stories and how they could be used, and I really like them actually. Because they don't, I like it especially when we move away from that guardian angel sort of
Yeah, from the
mentality.
saccharine sort of presentation, and it's like, no, these were terrible beings of light and power that didn't look human at all. It's only the absolute lowest choir of angels that actually looked at all human, and they didn't look very human.
Well, I've got a list here of Azazel, right? And apparently Azazel was banished, so he became fallen for introducing weapons to man.
That's interesting.
And Azazel obviously has appeared in Supernatural as one of the demons, but Azazel was an angel.
What I find interesting is the fact that technically angels are not supposed to have free will in the same way. So they have no choice but to be good. But obviously, some of them must break this programming, because otherwise, you wouldn't have the whole Lucifer refusing to worship man kind of thing. So that's either a really bad plot hole in the mythology, or there's a bit of scope for, as I said, breaking the conditioning. What's really interesting about that, and I think Lainey Taylor has done it quite well in her Daughter of Smoke and Bone trilogy. And the whole premise of Daughter of Smoke and Bone is that you've got Karu, who is a Well, she thinks she's an art student in Prague, a human. She actually turns out not quite to be that.
Right.
But years before Karu was human and grew up as a human child, she was, spoiler alert people, she was actually a chimera from a particular place where lots of species of chimera lived together. And they weren't demons, they just were different. But the angelic realm managed to create a door into the chimera realm, and the angels sort of looked down and loathed these creatures that they presumed to be demons. And the angel who was at the top, not God, but sort of like almost an all-father figure. And when I say all-father, what I mean is he conscripted all the female angels to sleep with him until they'd all given him a son to add to the army.
Okay.
It's pretty dark. And the ones who end up going into the army and making it through the training, because they go into the army as children. Once they've grown to adulthood, they live pretty much forever, as long as they don't die in battle. So actually, angelic life is pretty low. Mm-hmm. You know, they die quite quickly. But this is all sort of, I wouldn't say it's a metaphor for being radicalized, but these creatures are completely indoctrinated and radicalized to want to do nothing more than kill off chimera. And they almost take the chimera, all the species of chimera, to the edge of extinction.
Mm-hmm.
The chimera have a secret weapon, but I won't go into that.
No.
but it is really, really interesting. And that, you know, they look like winged human creatures, but taller, more beautiful, and just generally stronger. Some of them have special powers as well. Their wings of blaze, various other things. And they're terrifying fighters. They're really, really terrifying fighters. So they really are just this warrior class. I just found it a really interesting way of presenting it, because then you have a kind of Romeo and Juliet thing going on, where you have an angel falling in love with a demon or a chimera.
Yeah.
Everything goes very badly wrong from that point. Really, really badly wrong. But anyway, read the books. They're very good.
I remember reading in childhood, and for the life of me, and this is very bad, I can't remember what it was called. Hang on, I'm just going to check. It was a series of books. There we are. It was a series of books by Annie Dalton, which followed a young girl who had actually died, and she went up to heaven. And heaven, basically, actually, you sort of started working as angels, or you sort of became angels if you wanted to, I believe.
Yeah.
And they would be archangels, and then there would be these angels who would sort of help people out. And this was in the very sort of friendly sense. And they did have demons as well. Now, angels couldn't be seen by humans, but they would sort of walk with humans, or they would battle the sort of demons who were close by, trying to influence the humans or things along those lines and stop imbalances happening and let people be who they wanted to be. Which was actually quite enjoyable. And there was one book where she literally could be seen, and she was living the life there. And it was like, it was teenage sort of fiction. And it was about this teenager with crushes and all that jazz and friendship problems and things like that. But also trying to be an angel, and they were assigned like missions. And it was actually quite a charming little book series. I quite enjoyed it, actually, as a kid. And there was a character, there was a demon who became a demon because he'd done something wrong. And so he was sent down to hell. And so he was then doing the same thing as them, but obviously in the opposite direction. And they actually managed to sort of convert him. And he ends up in heaven instead, recruited as an angel, which I thought was actually really kind of sweet. And yeah, that was, there were lots and lots of these books. And I can't remember what the first one was, but that was it. It was called Angel Academy, and they are by Annie Dalton. And they were rather cute little books. So I don't really Yeah, I do actually recommend them. And that was actually using angels in the very stereotypical way that angels are supposed to be.
Yes.
So,
I
yeah.
do find a lot of angels in, and this isn't on purpose, I just, pick up the books and they turn out to be erotic fiction. But angels used in fiction that turns out to be quite erotic. For example, Sharon Shin's Archangel series, which apparently are infamous, but I didn't know that because I'd never heard of them. Which is interesting, but it's kind of works on the premise that every so often another archangel ascends to, the pinnacle of his, because they're always male,
Yeah.
of his power, and then needs to be mated to a human woman, and then it all goes very weird from there, is what I would say. And then you have Anne Rice, who wrote the Songs of the Seraphim, her angel books. There's two of them, and once again, a bit like her vampires, it's all a bit sort of sex and death. In fact, angels are often presented as very similar to the more sort of sexually attractive vampires. Not just by
Right.
Anne Rice, but by a lot of people.
Yes.
There's Storm Constantine as well,
Yes.
who wrote the Stalking Tender Prey. And the angels in that are terrifying. They're really, really scary. But once again, it's all a bit sort of sex and death, so. Which is funny when you think about the original source material, because as far as we know, they're infertile unless you breed them with humans.
Which again is linked with fairies.
Yep, we're back to that
We're
again.
back to fairies. It all goes to show they're all fairies. Everything, every supernatural creature is in fact a fairy. I maintain that. All right, well, I feel like we do have to talk about the elephant in the room, supernatural.
Okay.
Now, supernatural obviously does have lots of angels. One of the overarching plots is the battle between heaven and hell. And I talk about the overarching plot, I'm just going to stop at season five, where the overarching plot really sort of did end. And maybe so should the series
Is that
have.
before we got the Leviathan?
Yes, that was the that was before Leviathan, before Soulless Sam, before quite a lot of it. Yeah, you had Lucifer, who was locked up in a cage, and the demons all wanted to release him, but Lucifer was still an angel, and unlike demons, he, when he was released, he couldn't just take over a vessel as and when he wanted. Lucifer needs permission, as do all of the angels. They need permission in order to take vessels, whereas demons do not. And again, it was about that permission thing. What was interesting was that Lucifer, as a character, went through all sorts of odd moments where Lucifer seemed almost compassionate at times, and then in later seasons just went a little bit crazy and was a bit nasty, and then sort of had a bit of a redemption thing and then went crazy again. And it was very hard to follow what they were trying to do with Lucifer. But yeah, Lucifer was almost sort of believed what he was trying to do, and actually a lot of demons also believed in him as well. And it wasn't just chaos and anything like that, and everything like that. Then, of course, all of the other angels are kind of assholes too, including Castiel to begin with.
He certainly starts off that way. I mean, that's the most interesting part of Supernatural for me, is watching him gradually become more human and then sort of probably come out the other side and become almost more demonic.
Yeah, he definitely goes through a lot of changes, which almost, begs the question. Is there's a good line, which is that teaching angels free will is like teaching fish how to read, and they're just literally not designed for free will, which is why Castiel, some of them, sort of the archangels in particular, the bigger angels, seem to have be able to have more free will, which makes sense, of course, with Lucifer, the ability to rebel. But sort of the lower down ones, who are kind of the handymen, don't seem to actually have the capacity to have free will. They're there to follow orders. That is their purpose by design. It was interesting what heaven looked like and what the angels are like in that respect, and why some are more capable of free will and some aren't, and also kind of how they reacted to it, in that you have Balthazar, I think his name is, or
that does ring a bell.
But Balthazar, Bartholomew, I can't remember.
Balthazar seems a bit more likely.
Balthazar, yeah. Balthazar, who sort of gets really into vices instead, and he was one of the soldiers, like Castiel is a soldier. They did do it in a rather unique kind of way. And I suppose a part of me feels sort of a little bit sad that it's gone on for as long as it has, because I just feel like actually it's sort of spoiled it for me. I'm not really interested in the angels and supernatural anymore. They're rather samey now.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't watched the last few seasons, so I've got no idea.
Yeah, no, I've given up. I've finally given up.
There was a level of, okay, who's going to die this time, and who's going to go into this rage-stricken grief over it, and then they're going to come back. Like,
yeah,
nope.
Who's going to keep secrets from who? Who's never going to learn anyway?
Yes. I'm glad they're still having fun. I really am. It's just I can't join in now.
I can't. Yeah, I'm too tired. I'm so tired.
Since they are filming a new series, well, a series rather, the BBC
mm-hmm.
are doing a series of His Dark Materials by Philip Pullman.
Yeah,
and that has angels in it as well, and it's very interesting because the big war at the end, for those of you who haven't read this series, stop now and pick it up in a couple of seconds, you know, 30 seconds time. Yeah, the big war at the end is it's like the second battle of the War of Heaven. They had the one at the beginning where, you know, the rebel angel said, no, we want free will and we want to exist okay with everything. And actually, we don't really like what you're doing with these living mortal things.
Yeah.
In the Philip Pullman universe. And they were defeated. And the last book, The Amber Spyglass, is all about that again. It's all about claiming free will and keeping balance. And not just imprisoning human souls in what is basically just this huge dark hell. The angels are actually huge structures. They're not human at all, but they look human because our minds can't actually encompass what they really look like.
Yeah.
Because you have the witches in that series as well, and the witches live to be a few hundred years old, so by human standards, they're old. By angel standards, they're children, because the angels are thousands of years old. The war in heaven was just yesterday for them. So it's a really interesting perspective to bring that in. And I know the books have come in for a lot of criticism from various religious groups who feel that it wasn't respectful, but I maintain that he was really just drawing on mythology that's, you know, accessible to everybody.
Yeah.
And he was presenting his ideas in that format. And I think that's why the film version, they were going to make all three films and it fell down. And it was the film they did make was pretty toothless because they removed the religious context.
Yeah,
and you kind of needed that religious context, unfortunately, to really get the themes of the books. So I'm hoping the BBC will do better in that respect. So that was interesting.
Another adaptation we can look forward to, which has got an angel in it, is Good Omens.
Yes, and I am looking forward to that.
I'm very excited.
And who's Michael Sheen's playing Crowley, the demon?
No, David Tennant's playing Crowley. Tennant's playing Crowley.
I have to check now.
Yeah, David Tennant is definitely playing Crowley, and Michael Sheen is playing Azrael.
Okay, I got that the wrong way around. But either way, it'll be really, really good, particularly with those two.
Mm. Yeah.
It is a favourite book of mine. It's quite tongue-in-cheek and also very poignant, as you'd expect from Gaiman and Pratchett, who are the ultimate co-writing dream team.
Yeah. No, I'm really, really looking forward to this series. And Again, I love the way it was done because there's this whole bit at the beginning of the book where sort of Crowley and Aziraphale just sort of meet up and they just have a chat. I just thought
Yeah.
that was really funny. It's
It's
that the whole premise of the story is that they've just been living on Earth for so long, they're like, actually, we kind of like it here. We don't want it to be
We get
destroyed.
on all right. Yeah. And it's like Crowley pops into the bookshop occasionally to talk to Aziraphale.
Yeah.
Crowley works with this supposedly large firm, basically creating things, situations that will cause disharmony with humans. And, you know, Crowley's got a lot of ambition and a lot of intelligence, and he's just not really taken seriously by his superiors. And Aziraphale's not considered quite pure enough, and somewhere in the middle, they just really get on.
They do, and they are their best friends, and they really like each other. And again, I love this scene where they just get smashed together. They get really drunk, and then they go, okay, now we need to have a conversation. And they just both clear the alcohol out of their systems instantly and have a serious conversation. And they do, they really like each other. And it's the first time you see an angelic and a demonic friendship in that way, which isn't the forbidden friendship. They're just mates. I just think it's funny.
It's great. There's a great bit at the very beginning, actually, where all the stuff with the Garden of Eden's going down, and Aziraphale's the one, you know, obviously guarding it with a flaming sword, and Crowley kind of not deliberately tricks him out of the sword, but gets him to put him down for a bit. And
Yeah.
Aziraphale loses the sword and gets booted out of the job, and that's how he ends up eventually working in a bookshop. Whereas Crowley's sort of not really fallen, he more just sort of sauntered downwards, as the book says.
Yeah, he just sauntered downwards. But it's
They end up teaming up together to try and stop the end of the world, because they decide they quite like it here.
yeah,
They don't want to go back to heaven and hell, respectively.
no, they don't. It's also Crowley is actually because he's originally Crawley because
Yes.
he's the one who tricks Eve into eating
Yes.
the fruit, which you know you would have thought in if that context had been written by anyone else, they'd be mortal enemies because Crowley is the reason that Aziraphale gets kicked out basically and
Yes.
loses the sword. See, so if anyone else had written it, they would just be these mortal enemies who hate each other but have to work together. But because it's Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett, they're just not regular. They're very much not regular. They're just two people who actually kind of enjoy each other's company and won't really admit it until the end.
Yeah.
But they do. So I'm really looking forward to that because yeah, it's an angel who's not quite angelic and it's a demon who's not quite demonic. And I just think that they're fantastic characters.
Yes, it will be a really good one.
Because they
And
also did a that there was a radio version of it which had Colin Morgan in it, I believe.
yes, I listened to that. That was really good,
Was it
actually.
good?
Yeah, I
Yeah.
enjoyed that. Obviously you didn't they had a shorter amount of time, so perhaps some of my more favourite bits weren't in it. But then some of my favourite bits, perhaps everyone be going like, why is that your favourite bit? Nothing's happening. It's like, I know, I just like the way that everything's described there, kind of thing. So that's well worth listening to as well. And obviously the book, if you haven't read it, read the book, because the book's awesome.
It is. It's a very good book. It's well worth a read.
I can't ever look at a Queen CD without thinking which car did it was in the book. It's Queen. Any tape left in a car for more than a week morphs into Queen automatically.
I do like that. I think we're running out of time.
We have reached pretty much the end of our episode.
Yeah. So, all right then, we turn it to you now. What are your favorite angels in fiction? Who are your least favorite angels in fiction? And do you feel that we've missed any one out in our discussion today? Leave us a comment, send us an email or find us on Twitter. And yeah, we will catch you guys next week.
Yeah, thanks and goodbye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast. You can follow our podcast at podbean.com or from iTunes. For more information, visit our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/dissectingreaders or check out our author websites at jaironside.com and madelinevaughan.com. Please note that no dragons were harmed during the making of this podcast.